Caregivers, have you ever felt like nothing? I mean, nothing is going right? Well, cheer up and welcome to Dave the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Program, where you'll learn how to avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout and how to survive the grief process. You know, with roughly 100 million caregivers in the U.S. and Canada alone, that's about a third of the population. That means that everyone probably knows someone caring for a loved one. Join Dave and his guests now and every Wednesday at noon Pacific time as they discuss avoiding caregiver burnout and surviving grief. So find a comfortable place to relax, kick up your feet, and prepare to feel better and to receive practical tips and tools that you can start using immediately to get you through today and every day so you can survive your tomorrows. But not just survive, but to live life fully and abundantly. Yes, you heard me right. That is a possible goal to achieve. And now, here's your host, Dave Nassani.
Hello, Adrian. How are you?
Fine. How are you? I just want to close this door.
Sure. Well, from Los Angeles, a big LA welcome to all my listeners out there in Radio Land. I'm Dave, the caregiver's caregiver, coming to you live globally through the famous Blog Talk Radio Network, as well as YouTube and iTunes and podcast.com and blueberry.com and stitcher.com, all that stuff. That's such a long list. Caregiverscaregiver.com as well, my website, which is probably the most important one.
Right.
Because that'll get you to all the other places. Yeah, I'll do that. Yes, folks, I am the guy, and Adrian is the gal, who's going to help you and guide you through this very difficult journey called caregiving. Gosh, never before has a word evoked so many emotions in a caregiver, good and bad, when they hear that word, caregiver. Someone told me that it used to be called caretakers, but that wasn't appropriate because caretakers take and caregivers give, and I don't know. Anyway, we're going to do our very
best.
What?
You do know.
I do know. But I say I don't know when I do know. Well, anyway, we're going to do our very best to help you avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout. That's even worse than caregiver. Anyway, we have an exciting show planned for you today with my lovely co-host, Adrian Gruberg, founder of The Caregiver Space. And today we're going to be discussing with Adrian and myself, because we had someone who couldn't make it. And that happens when you're a caregiver, you know, life happens, emergencies happen, and
sure.
and caregivers take precedence over some silly little show that we do. Anyway, we're going to be talking about different scenarios that caregivers often find themselves in. And what do you do? And so, you know, this is kind of be like a reality show and peeking in on people's tragedies, not tragedies, but their difficulties. When you have a rough day, when everything goes wrong, when Murphy is running wild around your house. So stay tuned. You do not want to miss this show. And if you're new to the show, and we get many new listeners every single week, believe it or not, especially since we've gone video, I'm your host, Dave Nassani and Adrian Gruberg. And this show is to caregivers of every single kind. And one thing we know, I just get tired of saying it, and I'm sure you people get tired of me, you hearing it, but you know what? We got to say it because it's so important, and others maybe be hearing this for the first time. So for those of you who just want to check out while I say the same thing over and over again, don't check out because it's important, and it bears reminding of. But the one thing we know about caregivers is that they are caring and selfless and sacrificial people. Right? Aren't you that? I'm that. Adrian's that. I'm sure you're that. But you're also very prone to burnout because you're very caring and selfless and sacrificial, because you tend to put everyone else's needs above your own. Imagine that. And, you know, I say it all the time, like the airlines tell us, in the event of an emergency, put your own oxygen mask on first before you help your loved one with their mask. And it just sounds so selfish to do that, doesn't it? I mean, imagine a plane full of 100 parents. And they said, oh, put your mask on first. Well, I would bet $100, if not $1,000, that no one's going to do it. But you got to do it because they know that you're going to black out if you don't do it. Just goes against every fiber in our being, doesn't it?
Yes.
Yes. Well, the airlines know that if you don't put your needs above the needs of your loved ones, that you will most likely black out and you won't be of any good to anybody with anything. And caregivers are exactly the same way. I don't know why we are, but, you know. So let's talk about grief and loss here also. We do. And the devastating effects it have on us. And it can, you know, it automatically throws us into this other thing called the grief process, which is something we go into anytime we suffer loss, which people suffer loss all the time, don't they? Loss of a job, loss of our health, loss of, you know, our financial stability, bankruptcy, you name it. Anyway, unfortunately, there's only one way out of the grief process, and that's to go through it. And there's no way around it, no shortcuts. So hopefully we can help you through your grief and your loss if you happen to feel like you're stuck. And we're going to help you to get unstuck. What do you think of that? Well, I want to take this time and thank my last week's guest. Who was my last week's guest? I think it was Jay Crackler. Forgive me, Crackle? Jay. What?
Crackhour?
I usually write this down, but I'm reaching a blank line. Crackner. Okay, doesn't matter. Jay knows who he is. And just, you can listen to that show and this show and all our shows on the caregiver.com website. And that'll take you all those other places too, iTunes and, you know, Blog Talk, you name it. It's all there. One-stop shopping. And just for doing that, I'm going to send you my first book absolutely free. When you go on the website and you fill out that wonderful survey, are you a candidate for burnout, right? Most people will say, yes, I am. But if you were just not 100% sure, this quiz will give you a score. Isn't that nice? A score. You will know certifiably if you are burned out. And not only that, we're not just going to leave you burned out. We're going to tell you what you should do to get unburned out, and explain to you how to do that as well. So it's a good place. And just for doing that, I'm going to send you my book, One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships, because I mean, we all have unbelievable hardships, right? Anyway, my wife's story is an amazing story, and that's what the book's about. And you will be encouraged and inspired, because she makes us normal people look like whiners and complainers. I mean, she lost her speech. She doesn't have use of her right leg and her right arm. So it's like putting duct tape over your mouth and tying your right arm and your right leg behind your back and trying to wallpaper a room. But she can do it. Well, enough of that. Adrian, welcome to the show, and thanks so much for coming every week so faithfully.
My pleasure.
I really appreciate it. You're just so nice. If the world were full of more Adrians, the world would be a much better place. Don't you think so?
And likewise, if the world were more full of Daves.
Now, Adrian, I don't often get an opportunity to have you like introduce yourself and tell everybody who may not know who you are. Just take a minute or two and tell us, who is Adrian Gruberg? Because, you know, we don't know. I mean, I know.
Well, I'm a New
Put
Yorker.
You on the spot, huh? New
yeah,
Yorker,
I'm
that's
a New
important.
Yorker.
Yeah, me too.
And my husband was a New Yorker. But before I got to caregiving, I had a boutique advertising agency to the lifestyle market. So it was clothes and furniture and accessories and that kind of stuff.
I could see you doing that. That's a perfect. Did you like it?
Oh, I loved it. Yeah. Yeah. I had my own business for about 23 years. And then the time came when it just, everybody went internal because they could have people doing things on the computer, 1, 2, 3. And quality was not what we were delivering, but we certainly understood it. So at that particular time, Steve and I had just bought our loft, and we needed a project manager, and I became the project manager on that. So
were you living in the loft or what?
Not yet. We were building it. You were building it.
In the city?
Yes.
So it was an old warehouse or something, right?
Yeah, 1898.
Yeah, those are so cool.
It's a great building.
High ceilings.
Yeah,
a lot of windows.
12-foot ceilings.
Overlooking Central
Park.
Not quite
enough windows. No. But we moved in 2003, and in 2005, Steve was diagnosed with stage 1A lung cancer. And they had found that when he had gone to the hospital with a ruptured diverticulum, which led to peritonitis. It was in a CAT scan that they took. They thought, at first they thought it was appendicitis because of the nature of the pain. So they took him for an MRI before they took him up to surgery. And it turns out that in the MRI, they shot just a little high and they saw the lung cancer.
Wow.
So after he had his stomach surgery, he had to wait for it to be healed for them to start treatment for the cancer. Altogether that year, he had 6 surgeries between his stomach and his cancer. Lungs.
So how did that affect the Loft project? Just curious.
Well, we were in already.
Okay.
By that time, we were in the Loft. Yeah.
Thank God for small miracles.
Yeah. I mean, I was very lucky as a caregiver that I was in what I call a gilded cage because, I mean, yes, I had to be with him 24/7, not necessarily because he was sick, but because he was crazy. He was, for me, I had everything I could possibly want there. So it wasn't really a hardship that I couldn't go out. But after the year of surgeries, Steve was well, and we knew the doctors had told us that this was a cancer that will come back. But 2 years after he was diagnosed, his mother was diagnosed with lymphoma at 89 years of age, and she came to live with us to undergo chemo. And she's a tough little thing. She was great. And I could live with her under my roof. I could never have lived with my own mother under my roof, but Sylvia was okay. She really, well, she loved us both, but I didn't have any mother-in-law issues with her. And cool. Steve had mother-son issues. So I was the go-to person for Sylvia. She died in 2010. Steve passed away 9 months later in 2011. And while I had been taking care of them, I had discovered some online groups. It was way early in the internet still. It was nowhere near as sophisticated. So for caregivers, there wasn't that much. For disease-specific sites, some of these sites had support groups. And I just decided that I was going to, when Steve and Sylvia passed away, that this is what I was going to do. I was going to make a channel on, I considered it a channel or a station, a place on the internet for caregivers to be able to go. Making their lives easier. Now, I'm not the only one, of course, that's doing that. There's 65.7 million Americans, and I also get all of the English-speaking countries, South Africa, the Philippines, Australia, England, lots and lots of people, yeah. Lots of places. It's all caregiving is worldwide. It doesn't restrict itself to just the United States. So here I am.
I know that's the official number, but I really think it's a lot higher.
I do too.
Number one, I don't know how they can count.
I don't either. But if that is the figure, it's a third of the population.
Yeah. Like, how do they know I'm a caregiver?
Adult.
Nobody called me up and asked me if I was a caregiver. They didn't take a sample and stuff. So I think it's a third of the population, roughly, or maybe even higher. Who knows?
I do too.
But
and there's no compensation. It's horrible.
Yeah, that's the worst part.
Yep. So now you know my tale of woe.
And I was just talking to a guest who's going to be on in about 3 weeks, and she was saying, you know, she's conservative, and she's from England, of course, and she was for Brexit, and she's against unions, but she absolutely believes that caregivers need a union, because, you know, paid caregivers. She works in Florida, and it turns out that there are periods of time where they're absolutely working for free, you know, and nobody seems to care. Nobody seems to want to do anything. Nobody seems to think it's not fair that a paid caregiver should be working, you know, overtime for free. Anyway, I think I probably agree with her, even though I don't.
Well, what about all of the family caregivers who have to quit their jobs and
that's true.
And their marriage is split up and they lose their homes and they have to hawk everything just to take care of somebody?
That's true. So she's getting a taste of what family caregivers go through,
right?
Each and every day, day after day, year after year, sometimes decade after decade.
Decade after decade. It can really just shatter a life.
I'm on my third decade now, 21 years. So we're starting our third decade. And so, you know, we're going to talk about caregiver stresses, real life stories, real case studies, you know, the sandwich generation, which is you, right? Sandwich generation means you have someone you're caring for and then someone in the next generation also. So you're kind of stuck in the middle.
Sandwich would be had I had children. The sandwich generation is really younger than me. It's for people who have children whose parents are boomers.
And
who
then
they will be taken care of.
So that would make you like the club sandwich generation, where you've got three breads, children, spouse, and parent.
But I have no children. But had I had children, someone my age, yes, absolutely.
Right.
And you could be taking care of your spouse, too. My best friend has her mother-in-law and her mother. Mm-hmm. She brought up two kids while she was doing all of that, and her husband has a serious knee problem. So she's taking care of all of these people in all these generations.
Yeah, and my mother, I took care of her until she died when she was 93, and I was also taking care of my wife, just like you. And our oldest daughter is only 8 years younger than me because, you know, she's my stepdaughter. When I married her, she was her mother. She was 12.
Yes.
So there's potentially a situation with just someone 8 years younger than me that I could be taking care of a daughter and a spouse. And Charlene's mother's still alive. So that would make me a club sandwich also. God forbid, because I usually like club sandwiches, but I don't want that one.
But you are more of the sandwich generation than I am. Just it's just a matter of years of age. Yeah.
Or my kids, maybe.
Yes. Yes.
Anyway, also, you know, there's the therapy and the self-care for caregivers. You know, the smart ones know how to take care of themselves. You know, I had some back issues because I would go out and go bike riding and go twice a year to, you know, I'm being the healthy caregiver with hobbies. You know, I joined Toastmasters. I would speak every other week, learning, you know, my speaking abilities because I figure one day I'm going to be on the circuit talking to caregivers. And because I've written 3 books. So, I mean, it's going to happen one day. I have the radio show. There's so many things I could talk about.
Yep.
And then, you know, I was singing at the senior center once a week. I was doing all these outside things. I also was and am. I like I said, I would go to Mexico to ride my bike from Rosarita to Ensenada. But then a car hit me, not in Mexico, but here, just around my house, and broke my ankle. Ooh. And I was limping for 2 years. So I had to lay off the bike for a while. And then apparently limping for 2 years knocked a herniated disc out of my back. So then my ankle finally, after 2 years, felt good. But now my back felt terrible. And so, you know, it was always something.
Well, you biked to have lunch last year when I met you. And
yes.
I don't know. It's a nice bike. You take it seriously.
Yes, I do take it seriously. So I have all these hobbies and interests that I try to, do things outside of my caregiving responsibilities. And it's very important to do that. And for those who, I also have a son-in-law in Ventura at the beach, and I go and see him. He's like my best friend. Isn't that great to have a best friend son-in-law?
Yes, it is.
Sometimes you're closer to the in-laws than you are to the real kids.
That's nice.
So these are important things that caregivers must learn how to do. And, you know, we both speak to people who say, oh, I don't have time. I don't have time. I don't have time. Well, I mean, I don't have time either, but... You know, I run a gas station too. I mean, I do so much. If you were to put all the things on a resume that I do, you would say, oh my gosh, this guy's Superman, you know, and everyone keeps telling me I'm Superman. I said, well, you know, it's okay. I don't feel like I'm Superman. I just do it. And, I have the grace to do it. God gave me the grace. He smiled on me. And you probably can't do what I'm doing, but I can't do what you're doing. And
probably so, is. They're all very fulfilling as a combination.
And then sometimes you need a therapist. Sometimes you need a little help getting over stuff, you know. Sometimes we have to deal with anger. We're angry about stuff. Did you ever get angry when you were a caregiver?
Yeah, I got angry. Yeah. If I was doing all the things that I was supposed to be doing and managing both Sylvia's and Steve's meds and making sure that their lists of activities and things that they needed to do were current, and then to find them doing things that they were not supposed to be doing, they were the ones that were sick, not me. They were the ones that needed to do these things to improve their lives, and they were lazy about it. And that bothered me, and I got angry.
And I assume you also got frustrated.
Very frustrated.
Anger and frustration are like evil cousins.
Yeah. You know,
they go hand in hand. You don't get rid of
them. Right.
Just and, like anxiety and fear are evil cousins.
Depression is the other side of anger. When you turn that anger inwards, if you can't do anything about it, you'll just get depressed unless you can learn to let go of it.
Yes.
Say, this is just the way they are. You can't do anything about it. You can't change them.
Comes with grief and sadness also, you know.
Absolutely.
Watching a loved one's health decline rapidly can be a deeply
of course
negatively affecting experience. Then there's guilt. All these things are in the bag of caregiving, you know. And
there's guilt for a lot of different things.
Yeah.
I mean, people feel guilty that they're not the ones that are sick.
Yeah.
Why did it have to happen to him? Why didn't it happen to me?
Yeah.
And there's the guilt of feeling resentful.
Yeah.
You
feel
guilty
in two categories.
About there. Yeah, totally
deserved
different.
And undeserved.
The ones that you sort of take on yourself.
Yeah. And you shouldn't.
But
you can't just tell someone who's feeling undeserved guilt that they shouldn't feel that way, because they do feel that way.
And, they do feel
that way.
They got to
work through it. They got to work through it and see that, I have a thing in my book about how I compare it to a diaper and the poop's going to come. The guilt's going to come for whatever reason, you know. If it's deserved, then go, you know, turn yourself into the police. Apologize. Do whatever you have to do to make it right. And then throw the diaper, throw the guilt away. You don't need it anymore. It served its purpose. It was there to say, alert, danger, Will Robinson, you know, and it got your attention and you throw it away. But if it's undeserved, that means you don't have to turn yourself in the police. You didn't commit any crimes. There's no apology needs to be made. You know, you didn't do anything wrong.
Who's Will Robinson?
Really? Are you serious?
Yes, you said Will Robinson. I would.
Well, I.
All right.
Normally, I would say, well, this is going to show my age, but I think you're older than me, so I'm confused. Will Robinson is there was a show back in the 60s and 70s called Lost in Space.
Oh, I was not a Lost in Space fan. Okay, he was on that show.
Yeah, so Will Robinson was Billy Mummy, you know, and he had this robot. And anytime the robot sensed danger, he would be waving his arms and saying, right. Danger, Will Robinson, danger, Will Robinson. And so everybody kind of, you know, it was so funny in those days, and only those who are old enough to remember it, you know, do the danger Will Robinson thing. So if you ever hear that, that's what they're talking about.
Okay, now I understand.
So, yeah, so that's what guilt's supposed to do. It's supposed to alert you. So if you feel like, and you may need some help, you may need to go to some trusted people and say, hey, here's what happened. My mother-in-law is coming down on me because I did this or I didn't do this. Is this deserved? Do I deserve to feel guilty about this? And if you ask 10 people and 10 out of 10 say that you don't, well, maybe you don't.
Mother-in-laws know how to make you feel guilty because this is my, you know, like in my case, I didn't want her around when Steve was in the hospital because she was so nervous and she had to get here all the way from Brooklyn and she was in her late 80s and he was in an induced coma. And why did she have to come and just watch him there while he was hooked up to all these machines?
Yeah.
You know, it was like, Sil, I'll call you when, because he would have sent a cab for her and she would only take the bus from Brooklyn. So it would be a 3-hour trip. She said, I have to see him. I just need to see my son. And
Skype was not back in those days.
No.
Probably and wouldn't have worked anyway.
It wouldn't have worked anyway. But I mean, there were just so many things that they tried to inflict on you that you're not doing the right thing. You're not doing it the way I would do it. Right. And that's what it is.
It's
the
no
way
offense,
they would do it.
No offense to Jews, but Jewish mothers have perfected the art of guilt.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's just a fact. I'm not stereotyping, but I guess I am, but it's true.
Well, hell, there were books on, you know, there were books on it, you know, how to be a Jewish mother. It was not a nice book, but it was very real.
Yeah, I loved Fiddler on the Roof. It just took all the stereotypes and threw them all in one package, and it was a great movie.
Yeah.
Anyway, besides guilt, so that you got to throw that guilt away just like the diapers. So that was my analogy. And sometimes it helps to have a disgusting analogy like that, like a dirty diaper, you know. And then there's isolation, and then there's loneliness. You know, these are all the things caregivers go through. And then there's, you know, the physical strain. You know, you got a bad back and you're helping your loved one in and out of bed or in and out of a wheelchair or transferring stuff like that. And then there's
financial situations.
Yeah. I mean, the list goes on and on.
I mean, I'll give you an example. There's a woman that was in one of our groups. She lived about 3 hours away from her mother, but she moved in with her mother to take care of her, leaving her husband and children back at the house. And she was resentful because she also had a sister and a brother. And yet she was the daughter who was chosen. There's usually one.
The chosen
There's
one.
There's usually one. And,
yes.
And she... She was not about to make her resentment of them known. And it was nuts
that
to
turns
someone
into
like me. It turns into bitterness. And then, you know, what ultimately happened in this situation was when the mother passed away, she was not the one who got the lion's share of what was in the will.
Oh, my gosh.
The children.
Yeah, insult over
injury.
You know,
insult to injury. And that happens so often.
Oh, my gosh.
That the child.
More bitterness.
It's like the least favorite child gets the job. And the parent can be bitter because this is the least favorite child is making them do things they don't want to do.
Yeah. Like my father always says, whoever said life was fair.
Exactly. But you know, these are just stories that you just hear again and again.
Yeah. And I go on. There's illness, not only for the care receiver, but for the caregiver. So now you have a sick person taking care of a sick person. You have exhaustion. You know, they're not sleeping.
Right.
I mean, we can go on and on and on. That's why many caregivers need therapy. And you know, they look down upon, oh, I'm, you know, because they also have this syndrome of, I can do it. I don't need any help. You know, so no, I don't need a therapist. I'll be fine. But, you know, inside it's like all this ugliness just stirring around inside because they never vent. They can't get it out, you know, and it rots the bones. And that's where cancer comes from.
And what I feel about that is if they're in a position where they can have therapy, great. But if they can't, for some reason, sometimes it's just financial, but writing is a huge tool for releasing all of what's building up in you. And it's just that, like a basketball, just let out a little air every day.
Write the letters, but don't send them.
Exactly. You put down what you're really feeling. No one's going to judge that. That's your journal. Yeah. That's your stuff.
And there are some places to get free counseling, you know, through your church, your synagogue. Everyone knows a friend who's just a natural counselor, who's just, you know, someone who you can cry on their shoulder or whatever, and they'll always be there listening because that's just who they are, right? Mm-hmm.
So, like me.
Oh,
or you.
I can I'll call you when I have something to talk about. So let me give you some case examples. But before I do, let's take a quick break and we'll come back to real life stories. Because everybody loves a real life story, right? That's why reality shows do so well. So we'll be right back. Don't go away.
One arm, one leg, 100 words. Overcoming unbelievable hardships is about Charlene, a stroke survivor. Back in 1996, Charlene was a healthy, normal, very active 52-year-old woman whose amazing talents resemble that of both a Martha Stewart and a Wonder Woman. But all that changed when she suffered a massive stroke that left her severely speech impaired and paralyzed on the right side. Who am I? My name is David. I've had the privilege of being Charlene's husband since 1975. We had a wonderful, fairy tale, storybook-like courtship that culminated in our marriage a year later. Charlene had just come out of a marriage where after 10 years, she received two black eyes and a broken nose by her former husband when he came home high on speed. Charlene believed in no second chances of any kind for abuse, so she left. Finding herself all alone in the world with her 5 and 10-year-old daughters, Cynthia Lorraine and Deborah Lynn, she started raising them by herself for the next 2 years. Then fate brought us all together. After falling in love with Charlene, Cindy, and Debbie, our love then produced Rebecca Elizabeth. We had a wonderful, normal life for the next 20 years. But today, things are very different for everyone. One arm, one leg, 100 words, overcoming unbelievable hardships, is the amazing story of a woman's fight to survive. To survive all that life had thrown her way. Everyone who knows Charlene is thoroughly amazed at how she lives day by day, month by month, year by year, and with a smile on her face and hope in her heart that everything is going to be okay. Her faith in God is her foundation in this hope, that everything happens for a reason, and what doesn't kill her will make her stronger. She inspires everyone who meets her. Her accomplishments since her stroke are very impressive, often making us normal people look like whiners and complainers. So pick up your copy of One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships today. You won't be disappointed. Just hear what best-selling author Lynn Barrington has to say about it. If you think you have it bad, read this book. This is a beautiful, genuine story told from the heart. It's inspiring and easy to read. When you finish this book, you'll be able to look at your concerns in a new light. How about the reaction of 9-time Grammy and Dove Award recipient, the godfather of contemporary gospel Christian music, Andre Crouch? Charlene just won't let the promises of God go, and she has not let her circumstances get in the way of her faith. She's not just a survivor, she's more than a conqueror, as the Bible states. You'll be encouraged by her testimony, regardless of what you're going through. Available everywhere. But if you purchase your copy directly from the author's website, onearm1leg100words.com, Charlene and David will personally autograph your copy. Enjoy.
And we're back with Adrian Gruberg and Dave, me, Nasani. And we're talking about real life situations, caregiver situations that just get you down. And we just listed a whole plethora, if I'm saying that right on the right syllable,
yes.
plethora of nasty things in the caregiver bag that they're plagued with, you know, the real life issues of stuff like that. And I just want to talk about some stuff. Here's a real case example that I got from the internet. It wasn't one of my people, but, you know, who knows? A lot of these people are on multiple websites, so they could be online. I mean, I've got thousands on it. It's hard to keep track of who's who anymore. So many times I'll go through my things and I'll read. I say, wow, she'd be a good guest on my radio show. And I'll call her up and they'll tell me, I was already a guest on your show 9 months ago. And I said, oh, I can't even keep track of who's been on my show now. It's been like a couple of hundred people. But okay, here's an elderly wife experiences difficulty caring for an aging husband. Boy, does that sound familiar. Marsha, we'll call her, 65, enters therapy when she has no one else to turn to. She has recently retired and has been married for 40 years to Frank, 75. The two of them had looked forward to Marsha's retirement, planning to travel around the country in their RV. Does that sound familiar? But only 2 months after Marsha retired, guess what happened? Frank had a stroke. A stroke left him paralyzed on one side and unable to express himself verbally. After several months of rehabilitative therapy, Frank is able to walk with a cane and speak, but his speech is often garbled and difficult to understand. Frank is often moody and expresses great frustration with his disabilities, and Marsha feels lonely and isolated. Because Marsha and Frank have no children and no relatives nearby, nearly all of Frank's care falls to Marsha. At times, she tells the therapist, at least she can go to a therapist, she feels as if she is Frank's parent rather than his wife. And I can certainly relate to that. The two of them take their frustrations out on each other. She reports, and their home often feels like a battleground. Marsha feels guilty about not having patience with Frank. She is dissatisfied with her own health as well. She no longer has much time to cook or take regular walks, so she often eats frozen or fast food. She has put on 25 pounds since his stroke, and he's losing weight. And has little energy after doing all the housework and the laundry. In therapy, Marsha is able to acknowledge and begin to work through her grief over the loss. And this is a good thing. This is why therapy is so important. Grief over the loss of the man who was her husband and the future she had anticipated with him. The therapist helps her explore stress management strategies and other ways to cope with her frustration and anxiety. Marsha resolves to make time to exercise and prepare meals, realizing with the help of the therapist that if she does not feel energized or good about herself, she will find it that much more difficult to care for Frank. Marsha and her therapist also address her isolation and explore ways she might become part of a community once again. Now, does this sound realistic, Adrian? I mean, it sounds like this is a very pro-therapy thing. You know, they're pushing therapists here.
Well, it's not just a matter of pro-therapy. I think it just shows in her case, she's getting the information and the motivation from a therapist, but she could also get that from online groups or in forums because the common sense aspect to all this seems very obvious when you're not totally consumed by the caregiving. And
she's getting good advice.
She's getting good advice,
and she's making a decision to actually follow the advice.
Take the advice and to heart and do so and act on it. Absolutely.
And a lot of people ignore advice, don't they?
A lot of people will come up with, they'll just excuses. Be totally defensive and come up with excuses. Well, I can't, in my case, I couldn't go to face-to-face support groups, but I didn't stop there. Mm-hmm. It was like, okay, what's my alternative to face-to-face support groups? I was already in therapy, but I needed to talk to people who were sharing what I was going through. Yeah. I couldn't commit to being able to leave the house, which that could have been the end of it. And I could have just been frustrated and isolated. But I found an online group for wives of cancer patients. And that was where I fit, and that was where I found my support, and it was great. You have to just stop making excuses.
You know, they say where there's a will, there's a way. You know, and they also say successful people do what unsuccessful people are unwilling to do.
Unwilling.
That's right. And so there are so many people who have an excuse for everything. I can't do that because of this. No, I can't do that because of this. Well, how about this? No, I can't do that because of this. And I mean, they're just looking for excuses why they're going to fail, why there's no hope, why, you know, the glass is always going to be half empty.
Yeah.
But, you know, you have a choice to make. You know, just Google amazing people who have defied the odds, and you'll read about people and the odds were against them. Donald Trump, what were the odds that he would become president, even win the primary, right? Zero, if you listen to what everyone was saying. But he didn't give up. And there were millions of people just like him who the odds are against you, right? What's that old song Sinatra used to sing?
Yeah,
you gotta have heart. You know? And, you know, the lyrics go on to say, you know, you're striking out.
When the odds
out.
Are saying you'll never win, that's when the grinches start. If you need lyrics, I got them all in here. That's my insanity. I have tons of lyrics.
Well,
clouding my head.
You know, so I admire Marcia because she got out of her denial. You know, because number one, she'd have to. This therapist is telling her all these things that make her feel like a failure, right? She could have said, oh, my God, I'm a failure as a caregiver. You know, what's the use of even trying? You know, it's over. You know, my husband's probably going to die because of my inability, you know, to do the right thing and, you know, just go on and on and on. But instead, she says, you know what? Somehow I'm going to find time to cook. Somehow I'm going to find time to exercise, and I don't know how I'm going to do it, but I'm going to find time to do it. You know, I don't know how I go to the gym. I don't know how I can, you know, manage to go to the Toastmasters every other week, but I do it. You know, I put it in my schedule and I do it, for God's sakes.
I mean, not
everything gets done, but the important things get done.
Having structure as a caregiver is not an easy thing to stick to. You've got to be flexible. But if something interferes one day with your ability to get away and go to the gym, then you just have to write it in on the calendar and say, okay, I got to make that up.
That's right.
And it's this lack of structure that keeps a lot of caregivers from doing what they need to do, because they think that all that it amounts to is taking care of the person that is making them a caregiver. And that's it's the oxygen mask again. You've got to have yourself healthy in order to continue to do this.
And you got to have hope. You know, there's always hope if you find hope. I mean, I think of Helen Keller, you know, I mean, her situation was impossible, or the Holocaust people in the camps, so many of them, the Nazis took away all hope. You know, why didn't they all give up? But but many of them hung on, you know, and many of them survived. So hope is a very important thing. And whatever your situation is, because she saw her situation just get worse and worse and worse and worse and worse. All her dreams were dashed. And she could have just, you know, buried hope and put it in a coffin, nailed it shut, mm-hmm. and stuck it 6 feet under the ground. But she chose to acknowledge and realize that there's a new normal. Maybe it's not the first choice, but it's a situation. And so she started listening to the therapist. She said, okay, well, maybe, yeah, I can do that. Okay, yeah, maybe I can do that. Yeah,
I'll
maybe
try.
I can do that. And today she has a much healthier life, and she's getting healthy. And you know what? Frank's going to die one day, and she'll, like you, will be an eligible, single, healthy woman who may find love again. You know?
I mean, I feel... It's not a matter of, for me, if I had denied the fact that Steve was going to die, life would have been impossible. The two of us and the channels of communication between us were always open to discuss that. People who know that the person that they're taking care of is terminal, whether it's a 2 month sentence or a 5 year sentence, you know, you have to come to accept it and communicate with the other person about it because you're scared. And in truth, they're scared. And in many cases, they're scared because they don't want to leave you.
But Winston Churchill says there's nothing to fear but fear itself.
And that's when that fear is shared, it becomes diminished to a certain degree. You don't know what's ahead of you. You just have to face it.
Let me read another one. This is a woman overwhelmed by multiple caregiving positions in middle age. Multiple. Mm-hmm. I think that means more than two. I don't know. Marisol, 47, seeks professional help for stress, anxiety, and emotional overwhelm when she finds herself experiencing difficulty tending to the needs of her children, her husband, and her parents. So there's your club sandwich. They all live in another state. Her father was recently diagnosed with dementia. Marisol reports, and her mother calls often, seeking advice and support. Marisol feels guilty that she cannot provide more help to her mother, but she also feels relieved that she is not closer, telling the therapist she has enough to deal with at home. And I probably feels guilty about feeling that way. She has two children in high school and one in elementary school, and she works part-time while her husband works long hours, leaving her responsible for household affairs. Marisol tells the therapist she feels as if no one cares about her emotional upset. She is always, quote unquote, needed, but no one stops to ask her what she needs.
Right.
And she feels guilty for having these feelings as a wife and a mother. The therapist helps Marisol understand her needs are not less than those of others just because she is, quote unquote, supposed to be a caregiver. Together, they explore ways Marisol can reduce her stress levels and ask for emotional support from her family. Therapist helps Marisol research support groups local to her mother's area for the family members of people with dementia. And Marisol brings her family in for a family therapy session in which they discuss ways they could spend more time connecting emotionally and becoming closer as a family. So what do you think of that?
I like the notion that it brings her more connection to the family, because if you don't ask for their help, it's very rare that they're just going to volunteer. But if you structure a way for people to share the responsibilities of caring, even if it's just somebody coming in once a week to be there so you can go have a day to yourself, it's very important that you communicate those needs and leave the channels for communication open. and not just be mad at them for not doing, because you've got to tell them you need their help. I'm not a super person. I can't do it all by myself. I need your help.
And you know, there's a concept here of being penny wise and pound foolish, or pinching pennies and throwing away dollars.
Right.
You know, let's say it'll cost $300 or $400 to find a professional caregiver and work on these issues. Let's face it, if the car broke down and the mechanic says, I need $400 to fix this, you're going to come up with $400.
Sure.
But when your family breaks down, oh, no, I can't afford that. But you know what? That $400 that she spent, for example, is well spent if it fixes all these issues for both of them, for Marcia and Maricel.
Definitely.
To definitely have a happier life. I mean, like those Visa commercials, priceless. What price can you put on peace and you know, no anxiety and no guilt and no frustrations and no anger? I mean, come on. It seems like a no-brainer to me.
No, I totally agree. Totally agree.
So... Hopefully, everyone listening to us will agree as well. I have a whole bunch more stories, but we've run out of time. We're down. We've got about five more minutes to go.
Do you have a commercial you need to run?
I do. So let me run that commercial, and don't go away. We will be right back.
Anytime we suffer loss, we grieve. And a lot of people don't realize what even the grief process is. But it could be 5 to 7 steps, ranging from denial, I don't believe this is happening, anger, oh my gosh, I'm so upset this is happening, to a form of bargaining, how can I get out of this, to depression, which is a very serious thing because that often leads to suicide. And then finally, after you realize you have no more control over your situation and you're totally okay with the new normal that it brings, that wonderful, wonderful place called acceptance.
Being a caregiver takes a special person with passion and compassion. But even you can become a little burned out from time to time. The Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Show was developed to help you overcome obstacles, adversity, and burnout, as well as just having a place to rest, relax, and recharge your batteries. We've all been there, and you're not alone. Now, you can take the Caregiver's Caregiver with you. Get the top 25 radio shows in convenient form that plugs right into your USB car stereo or computer. Learn the techniques, tips, and encouragement we all need to better handle the day-to-day challenges. For around $1 per show, just $29.77, get the credit card-sized USB card to have with you anytime you need a caregiver's pick-me-up. Just go to DaveTheCaregiversCaregiver.com and order yours today. Go to DaveTheCaregiversCaregiver.com now. Consider it an investment in you, and ultimately, an investment in them.
And we're back with Adrian and myself. So let's recap, Adrian, like Dorothy in The Wizard of Oz. So what have you learned today, Dorothy?
What have I learned? I learned that there's no place like home. what have I learned?
Or the most important question is, what do you think our listeners have learned?
I hope they've learned that talking about stuff is important. Finding a therapist, or sometimes the hospital social worker, who can listen and
anyone
help you,
who will listen, yeah,
and help you talk out how you can survive this healthily. That it's not the end of your life. And your life may be more fulfilling and rewarding because of it. You know, I think people who are caregiving have to take care of themselves. And that's the first thing they hear is, you know, as a caregiver, you have to take care of yourself first. But they often don't feel that it's possible. But they can take care of themselves a little bit at a time, and it grows into a healthier caregiver.
And sometimes talking to someone doesn't seem like that's going to do something to help them, because, well, I'm just talking. I'm just writing, like you suggested. But that's the simplest way, I think, to vent and to be better, to self-care. Because number one, you know, we're not aware of the situation. We're in denial about things, or they say you don't know what you don't know, you know. And it's true. If we don't know the condition we're in, then we don't know that there's a problem, and we don't know how to fix the problem, and we don't even know that there's a problem to be fixed.
And we don't know what questions to ask.
Yes. And sometimes it's just as it's simple, while you're sitting in that hospital room, to just tell the nurse, is there anyone I can talk to? You know, because many hospitals mm-hmm. have a chaplain, free counsel, free advice. And if necessary, you know, they'll correspond it to your faith, you know, if you're Jewish or if you're Christian.
But they don't even have to be. I mean, so, this person has a wealth of wisdom, regardless of a chaplain is taught in a hospital situation to be able to talk to any religion.
Yeah.
They may be Jewish chaplains, they may be Catholic chaplains, they could this, that, or the other thing.
Yeah, wisdom
is
wisdom.
But they can talk to anybody.
And many times, I mean, I've been in a lot of hospitals, many times it's slow, many times it's busy. But, you know, during the slow times, I've had long conversations with nurses mm-hmm. and lots of wisdom there. I mean, there are just so many places, so many people that you would never guess you would talk to. You know, the proverbial bartender who's the greatest counselor of all, you know,
yeah.
Go to a bar, you know, and have a club soda and talk to the bartender.
I'm glad you said club soda.
Yeah.
don't, that's another danger that caregivers face is becoming addicted to, yeah. to substance abuse.
I need a wine. I need my cocktail.
And so. food. And yes. That's why they'll put on. You know, it becomes comfort. I need some comfort. Oh, a chocolate bar, some pudding, you know, whatever it is. There are a lot of little traps that you can fall into. You know that.
This turned out to be a very, very good and informative show.
Good.
Rich. This is like we set a table of great, rich, delicious Middle Eastern foods, you know, and the desserts and the lamb and you know the rolled grape leaves and stuff. I'm Middle Eastern. So.
I'd like some baklava, please.
There you go. So I hope everybody appreciates the table that we set before you. Now all you have to do is eat, as the Jewish mother says, eat. The Arab mothers say that too, by the way.
Yeah, the Jewish mother, S costs geld. Food costs money. You shouldn't just leave it. Eat.
eat. In Arabic, they say, Ekeb. You know, Ekeb. Eat. So tell people how they can get a hold of you.
Sure.
I notice sometimes you're on your website and you're actually the one answering these posts.
Absolutely.
They leave these long posts.
You've seen some of
those.
I'm glad you've seen some of those, because when these people will say in those things, I never thought that I would be writing this much. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
and it's like, no, keep writing.
Yeah, it's going to help you. Because once you start, they can't stop, you know, and that's
great.
A
lot of these really long posts are people who feel totally defeated, and that's where I pop my head in and tell them.
You do an awesome job, you know.
Thank you.
You're very wise.
So is Corey.
Yeah.
Corey does a great job too, and we have some members who
Yeah, the volunteers.
Pretty sharp. They not just the people who were other caregivers who were on the
Who yesterday had a problem and now today they're helping people.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, their wisdom is growing. So,
so
to get in touch with me, I am Adrienne, A-D-R-I-E-N-N-E, at thecaregiverspace.org. That's right. Adrienne at thecaregiverspace.org. And the site is just thecaregiverspace.org. We're also on any social media, but if you go to the site, you can just
Facebook.
Click on all the different, platforms that we're on. Yes.
And I'm at caregiverscaregiver.com, and that will be the one place that will get you everything you need to know about me and what we do and all of that stuff. So thank you. Until next Wednesday, we will see you again. God bless you.
Thank you for joining Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Show. Make sure you tune in every Wednesday at noon Pacific Time and anytime afterwards on podcast to catch more of Dave and his tips to caregivers on avoiding burnout and surviving the grief process right here on the Worldwide Block Talk Radio Network. Goodbye.